Welcome to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like technology, communications, anthropology, and the performing arts. I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
We're joined on this program by Shane Flores and Becca Sharp from New Mexico Highlands University. Shane is the research assistant for the Manitos Community Memory Project and holds a BFA in Media Arts from the New Mexico Highlands University in Las Vegas, New Mexico. He is currently the principal at Studio Wet Future, developing history and culture-based content for cultural institutions that include the Bradbury Science Museum, the City of Las Vegas Museum, the New Mexico Department of Cultural Affairs, and UNM Maxwell Museum of Anthropology. Becca Sharp is a BFA student with a focus in multimedia and interactivity in the Media Arts program at New Mexico Highlands, specializing in developing virtual reality cultural artifacts using Unity and Blender. She has been a part of creating and installing different exhibits for museums and historic sites in New Mexico, and plans to continue working around New Mexico while getting her MFA at Highlands University. So we've been talking about the Manitos Digital Archive, of the Manitos geographic diaspora in northern New Mexico and southern Colorado. And Becca, you have been activating this archive. I love that word. You have been activating this archive as a virtual reality immersive, an interpretive immersive. In the last segment, Shane, you touched on something that seemed to be very important to you that I'd sort of like to get into in a little more depth. You talked a lot about this kind of archive and Becca's activations, reconnecting this diaspora, that it's a way to reconnect people with their memories, with their place. That seems to be something that you're very passionate about.
People are communicating very differently than they were a century ago or even 30 years ago, really, right? During that time where these linkages, say, might have been broken either because people had to move or whatever might have broken those linkages and broken that continuum for cultural transmission, was much more difficult in the past to be able to repair those things because it wasn't really easy to get information back and forth. But now we don't have that. We have this opportunity now to streamline this and make this a much easier process.
Cultural transmission, what does that mean?
The transmission of knowledge and or stories and or history, whatever that mean, whether it's a personal story about something your grandmother did, or even maybe say something about something your grandmother knew how to do, right? So it's both, you know, sort of useful knowledge, but even sort of stories about who you are or where you came from. Sometimes these things get lost. I mean, I probably got interested enough to be interested in that. My grandmother was gone, so I didn't know how to, you know, I couldn't get that back once it's done. These are how these things are lost, right? And that included practical things. So now we have the opportunity to reconnect all those linkages on a very personal level. What it actually really means is like 50 years ago, you had to be a specialist with specialized equipment to have access to mass media or the transmission of information in that way. Well, now everybody has access to it, which means that there is that possibility now for this to be a peer-to-peer transmission of knowledge and information. So, you know, and now we do have that opportunity to do things that might have not have happened very easily 50 years ago.
Shane, because we're talking about cultural transmission, I do want to talk a little bit about the really specific culture of the Manitos homeland and why it hasn't been visible in history and why it's important to preserve spaces and memories and artifacts that come out of this culture. I know that some of the work that you all have been doing, especially with the diaspora, is going back and identifying people in existing archival photographs because the Hispanic subjects were not identified by the WPA photographers. So can you talk a little bit about this cultural landscape?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to talk about that, actually. And I'm going to get controversial again. A thing that we talk about a lot and I think about actually often is that, you know, part of the reason why there is this diaspora and why things have been difficult for the Manitos culture and the people in there is that this region in New Mexico has been subject to centuries now of extractive practices, both economically, right, mining and things like that, that take wealth out of the state and don't put it back in, you know, and so this leads to cultural conditions where the same thing sort of happens, right? Even our knowledge, even our artifacts, partly because of those same economic things, leave and don't come back, right? And so, you know, there's even things like, for example, one of our partners in Abiquiu, the Abiquiu Library and Cultural Center has been really good. People like to come and study Abiquiu from different places because it's a very interesting place. And for a long time, they'd come, they'd study, they'd make careers out of what they learned at Abiquiu and not even bother telling the people of Abiquiu what they learned about Abiquiu, right? And so Isabel Trujillo, who's the director there, got really good about saying, hey, look, you want permission to dig? Okay, well, you better at least tell the community what it is that you learned. So this is that extractive practices that often cause the breakage of linkages of things like that. Not that one specifically, but like that. A lot of the knowledge, a lot of the artifacts went away and then disappeared, right? They went down to the third sub-basement somewhere in a lot of different places, including like, say, for example, and this is a sideways leap, but it's kind of what I'm talking about. Some of the origin of this project specifically came out of a project that didn't actually happen, but was the start of something, which was looking at the FSA photographs that were taken.
FSA?
Yeah, the Farm
Service Administration.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. I sometimes forget those things. And so there was going to be this project, and there was a meeting at Taos. And, you know, so there was this meeting about, you know, wanting to explore what to do with the Farm Service Administration photos. But the most interesting thing to me that happened at that meeting was somebody had one of those photos and immediately sort of this crowd gathered around it. And there became this huge discussion about who it was, where it was taken, this exact kind of sharing of knowledge, right, which is central to our project now. Later, Esteban, our project director, recognized this process happening in Facebook groups that was essentially the same crowdsourcing of information. Someone would post a photo and suddenly there'd be a huge thread talking about who was in it, where it was taken. This is the cultural transmission of knowledge that really got us very excited. And, you know, how it relates to, I think, what you're talking about, Ellen, just to get back to it, is the politics of those FSA photos when they were taken were things exactly like, and, you know, there was a lot of probably practical political reasons for that, because those FSA photos were essentially a form of internal propaganda for a lot of good reasons often. You know, they were trying to do things. They were trying to get people interested in helping vulnerable communities and stuff. But there was a hierarchy of value. And so there was things in those photos like they would identify the doctor in the photo that came from somewhere else that was considered a person, but the Manitos people in the photos in the communities where they were taken were never identified.
They're all sidekicks.
They were called the farmer or the farmer's kids or whatever. Yeah. You know, and so this is where sometimes this erasure you're talking about is what happened. And so there's this idea of restoration of this knowledge and stuff. So yeah, now we're all looking at FSA photos and going, yeah, that's, I know who that is. That's so-and-so's grandfather. And so this fixes what you're talking about.
So it makes me curious, Becca, when you go to do your work, are there gaps in the information that you have to fill in? And how do you go about that when, say, reconstructing the Real Sala in Cuesta? Did you have all the blueprints and interior and exterior photographs and samples of the texture?
Not at all. I had two photos, black and white, to work with, and really this project required outreach to the community of Cuesta. It required talking to people who had memories from Cuesta, and so an outreach was actually social media. The director, he would use social media to outreach to the community, and from there we gathered information because there was actually no images of the inside of the sala, so this was all interpretation. But I wanted to outreach to the community to get their memories and go based off of that. And so that's how I actually found my information, was through memories from hearing people talk about the sala and what it meant to them.
So was it almost like doing one of those, what are the SketchUp artists when you do a most wanted poster?
Yeah.
I mean, in a sense, was that you were trying to create what this might have looked like or maybe what it evoked from people's describing it rather than having the actual image?
For the inside of the Solo, that is definitely the case. For the outside, we're able to have nice photos that would allow me to recreate the building. But for the inside, it was definitely research on what buildings looked like in Cuesta around that time. And so it was basing off of research and outreach to the community.
But you've both spoken now to something that seems really critical and that's actually come up in some of our other programs with our other guests, which is the democratization of both the source material and kind of the crowdsourcing of the source material, along with the democratization of access. I mean, we've heard this actually a couple times now where people are using like social media to identify someone who might be unknown in a photo or to seek out images or memories. But then there's also a way to actually get it back into the public hands, especially, Shane, it sounds like you're very concerned that the stakeholders get back the benefits of the research and the archiving and the interpretation. And it seems like that would be something that would be almost impossible to do with traditional methodologies. I'm curious also, you mentioned your director, Shane, and you're the research assistant. So this whole project, and maybe this is just a little bit of a tangent, but this whole project came about how? You said there was this meeting in Taos and then people were looking at this picture, but is that prior to the Manitos project actually existing?
That was prior. I mean, so being the humble research assistant, I know my experience.
We're not so humble.
Right. And so, you know, the actual origin, I may not be totally clear on how it developed, but basically what happened, you know, even after that meeting, there was a workshop about that project where I actually really got to meet Esteban Rael Gavez, who is the project director and in a lot of ways really sort of the big idea person for this project. And so, you know, that was a fun kind of 2 days. And I guess he remembered me and stuff like that. And I've also worked with Mimi Roberts, who formerly worked with the Department of Cultural Affairs. And they're the two people that really put this project together in conjunction, you know, with Highlands University. And Miriam Langer, you know, she's the person who kind of is really instrumental in talking with the main funder, which is the Mellon Foundation. So, you know, they're the ones that really got this and put this all together. And then luckily I got invited to be the research assistant. But I think what really happened in there was Esteban, who's a former state historian and is very familiar because he is actually, you know, not only a member of, but very involved with the Manitos community and, you know, has extensive knowledge, really was somebody who recognized all this new things. He got very excited about what was happening in these Facebook groups that spontaneously emerged out of, you know, a set of these villages that are in these communities. Facebook groups have seemed to have been driven by people involved in genealogical research, which kind of really gave a structure to these groups for how people interact with each other and sort of had the idea to go like, let's make this a project that helps facilitate this happening and also create an archive where everyone can save this. Because there was a lot of concerns about things like, you know, the fact that Facebook is a private business, people probably thought they were saving photos forever on there, but, you know, the groups can go away in a heartbeat if Facebook decides to do this.
Or they can change licensing agreements about what they can do with your images or the information. Right. Yeah.
So a lot of big concern was like, how to migrate this process into a place where it's in control of the communities. They have control over their heritage and their cultural assets.
The irony would be that this spontaneously happened on Facebook and you could end up with the exact same, what did you call it, cultural extraction happening digitally. I've brought this up with some of my own colleagues where they say, well, it's on Facebook, so we're good. And I say, you have no idea. Right. They're not that it's bad, but you have no idea where that's going to go, what access you might have to it in 6 months or a year. The democratization part, I think, is just so crucial. It's been interesting how that's been coming up again and again in all of this kind of work with the people we've been talking to on this program. That seems to be such a critical aspect of how people want to apply the technology. And if you want to learn more about the Manitos Community Memory Project, this digital archive, you can visit manitos.net. Augmented Humanity is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM-FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, string bassist and loopmeister extraordinaire, production assistance by Tristan Klum.